Hello and welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast with your host, myself, Jordan. And on the pod this week, I am joined by the host of West Ham Fan TV, Dan. What are you saying, Dan?
Not much, mate, not much. Good. Like, happy to be here, obviously, so-so with the football. But yeah, just, you know, always good to be on this show.
Good to have you here as well. We've also got one of the main figures, one of the main faces from Arsenal Fan TV Turkish. What are you saying?
How's it going, Jordan? I'm good, man.
You well?
Yeah, I'm good, I'm good.
Was you Huddersfield on the weekend?
Yeah,
were you there?
Yeah,
you were
there, man. Just not in Belarus this week.
I hear you. And we have making a debut on the pod. Now, you don't support a football team. You support football and footballers, which I kind of like that as well. Michael, what are you saying?
I'm all right.
You good?
Thanks for having me.
Just come on the pod.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Have you prepped well? Have you warmed up well? Your first time on the pod?
I've always prepped.
You're good to go.
Always good to go.
All right. I'm going to get into it in a little bit. Right, no drive-bys on the pod this week, but do not forget to subscribe to the podcast. We're on all the outlets, all the socials. Go and follow us and subscribe on all the usual outlets there. Now, no drive-bys, as I mentioned there. Let's get into our first debate of the pod, guys. I want to talk about fans and racism in stadiums, because it's obviously been something that has made massive headlines across a number of games in the Premier League, in particular this season. And to do so, to join our chat, I want to bring in Darren Lewis from The Mirror. Darren, what are you saying, man?
Good evening. I hope nobody despises me.
No. So you might have heard some off-air talk from one of our guests here. You don't despise The Mirror,
no,
do you?
No, I don't despise The Mirror. In fact, The Mirror obviously is one of the more left-leaning tabloids. It's more The Mail and The Sun, but it's just...
Don't let him trigger you, Dan. Don't let him trigger you.
I can't even hear him, to be honest. <can't>
can we get Darren on a little bit louder in our ears? Cool. So, Darren, let me start with you. I know that you've been an advocate for, getting rid of racism in football for many, many years. And I know you've written a lot about it this season in particular. There's been a number of incidents across our stadiums. And I want to talk to yourself and the boys here about if we're at the point now where we need to start expecting fans to hold other fans accountable when they see racism in the stands. And I know that that's a bit of an uncomfortable request to maybe put on the football fans, but if nothing's going to be done about it, is that where we're at now?
Well, listen, the responsibility shouldn't have to be on the fans. The responsibility should be on the people who invite fans to go and enjoy a sporting occasion. So it's a little bit unfair in many respects to expect the fans to do the job of the people who are there to protect them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, these statistics and these reports and whatever else, they are all just telling us what we already know. We, for many years, you yourself have been doing it, Jordan, and I'm sure the people in your studio as well, have been calling it out, have been seeing it, have been hearing it. We're well aware of it. It's not gone anywhere. It has been around us forever. All that's happening now is that the bile is seeping to the surface. And we are seeing it in the top division. There is a kind of fantasy that if it doesn't happen in the Premier League, it doesn't exist. So anything that happens in the Championship, in League One and League Two, we ignore. We think that it's abroad that has a problem. Italy, Spain, Russia. When it happens over here, we make excuses for it or we don't cover it properly. But the fact is that it's here and it always has been here. It hasn't gone anywhere. So it's not a disturbing rise. You know, it's here. It is just now hitting us squarely in the face, and the authorities need to find a way to deal with it.
Dan, the most recent incident was one of your games, the West Ham Liverpool game last Monday, wasn't it?
Yeah, Monday.
Was you there first of all?
Yeah, I was there.
A, what did you make of your club's response to Salah being racially abused? And secondly, do you agree with Darren that we can't put that onus on football fans to basically hold other fans accountable when they hear racism in stands?
Well, I mean, I think the club dealt with it, you know, well enough. Is they went and investigated it. They've handed evidence over. What evidence that is, I don't know, because the guy wasn't captured on camera. So I don't know what things they have in place to identify people and things like that. But yeah, it's such a tough one. Obviously, look, you can't. You know, if you're in there and you say you was to confront that person, and you know, you can end up kicking your head in or mm-hmm. something like that. It's a difficult one, but I think as a fan base, it's like, say if someone starts a racist chant, is you drown them out with another chant and things like that. And or as a collective deal with them, or as a collective get the stewards to remove them or something like that, rather than promote. But I think Darren's right in terms of it's really hard to put the onus fully on fans to say, right, if this guy's being racist, you need to deal with that guy, because there's so many safety elements that come into play.
Mm-hmm. Bear this in mind. If you think about stewards, what do they get paid? £8, £10, £12 an hour? If they can see incidents that they want to get involved in, why should you? Yeah. And they are the ones who are there to keep order at these stadia. That's the reason why, in theory, the ideal thing, yes, would be for people to police themselves. But consider this, if you're in a tube and you hear somebody saying something they shouldn't, or in a bus these days, would you get involved? Should you get involved? Mm. You probably should. But we live in a society now that is increasingly violent, and people want to think about their personal safety. So it's very, very difficult at the moment. And I think the only way that we can deal with this problem is by the people who run the game showing zero tolerance. And zero tolerance has to mean just that. They won't, because they don't need the aggravation. But because they don't, the problem keeps coming back again and again. That's why we need to show zero tolerance. If a fan in your... one fan does something wrong, bang, you're in trouble.
So, Micah, I've done shows on racism in football. I'd probably do like 5 or 6 a year, and I'll continue to do them when it's necessary as well. What can we do now? Because I was planning the show thinking to myself, I don't want to do another show highlighting a racist incident in a football stadium, because we've done that. I thought, okay, so come up with an idea as to what can be done to try and solve the problem. And I actually agree with what's been said so far. It's a bit harsh to expect somebody to take on someone that's twice their size, and I get that. Do you have any kind of theories or ideas as to what can be done in terms of a zero tolerance attitude? What can we do? Because otherwise we'll be here again in 6 weeks time. It'll be at my club, it'll be at Spurs, we'll be here again. What can we do?
I mean, the only reason why you would say that we'll be here again is probably because it's a long-standing thing that's happened in football. Mm. Normally, like, just recently it's being more highlighted, or the punishments are becoming a bit more severe in relation to that. But what was it, based in Italy? The fines that they're giving out for racism don't compare to the other, like, different fines that you see in football. It's only as of recently now, like, the zero tolerance policy that clubs are, you know, dishing out, giving to some of the fans, are starting to become more severe. But before that, it wasn't really a thing whereby, I mean, it's a long-standing thing, we're going back, and I don't think it's just from football itself. You have to look at, you're going back into the background of the individual that comes to the football match. So it's a bit, it is harsh to say that the onus should be on fans to police other fans. But then again, you have to ask yourself, what is the club doing? You know, what are the club doing? Are they singling out, like, really giving out punishments that will make other people sit up and look like, when they do come to a football stadium, they do behave themselves in a manner which, you know, upholds quality of the game.
Right, so that brings me on to my next point, Turkish. My next idea, and a lot of people say, you can't do this, you can't do this. My thing would be, if there's a filmed evidence of somebody being racially abused in a football stadium, I would fine the club of that fan. And people say, oh, you can't punish everybody for one person's... And I'm at the point now where I think Chelsea, for example, theirs was the most high-profile one this season with Sterling. I would say have a rule in place that says, we've got evidence that suggests that one of your fans racially abused somebody in the stadium. There is a X million pound fine and a 3 points docked. Now, that impacts everybody, and it's very, very harsh. But I think we're at the point now where it's got to be harsh. Am I going too hard?
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. When you say a million, it has to be them levels for it to actually impact the club enough for them to actually take it more seriously.
I think so.
But will it happen? Impossible, if you ask me. For them to be fined up to a million goes against, I think, what generally football and FA and UEFA want, which is to hide the issue under the rug. Mm. They start issuing fines for a million here, fines for a million in Italy, fine for a million in Russia, wherever it is, the issue is at the forefront of football again. And that's not what they want. At the same time, the issue of racism is much broader than football. It's an issue in society that needs to be fixed first.
It is, but football can fix football's problems. Do you know what I mean?
In my opinion, the way it can help, like, it will never be eradicated, but naming and shaming people properly. Have, like, the same way people are just named and shamed for other crimes or other offences, name and shame them, probably put their pictures in the newspapers, put their pictures on the news.
Is it not a feeling that they might be a kind of vigilante style?
If that's the case, they put themselves in that situation.
The only problem is that, though, is it's a lot of the time it's their family. So say they've got kids that go to school, they might not be racist themselves because their dad is something at the football. Now they get targeted. Like, and that's the thing. And same with the fine as well. It's like, that might be well and good for an Arsenal, but if you're a Huddersfield who ain't got much money, that is going to be, you know, a bigger punch. Life bans, like, straight away. What they need to do is actually improve the way that they record and capture this. So anyone who comes and says, you know, racist at the football, you've got all the evidence straight away, life ban. And then you start weeding these people out. Then over time, you're going to have less of them go into the football, because you're just banning them from football completely. They won't be at the football. And just improve that, like I said, how you then go and catch them, basically. Whether that's better surveillance, microphones, or just more stewards and stewards actually watching, maybe having some sort of mic, as soon as they say it, that's the number, bang, ban. You know what I mean?
Darren, let me ask you, and I think I know the answer you're going to give me, but I'll ask you anyway. What's the process once evidence is provided to the authorities? Because in the case of the Millwall-Everton game, the West Ham-Liverpool game, the evidence is pretty obvious of what was being said and what was happening. Why, with that blatant evidence there, are things not being done about it? Do you know what the process is and why it just kind of ends up with being a minor fine or some kind of inconclusive result?
Well, we don't really know what the result is yet. And that is another part of the problem. These things take far too long to investigate. Racism, abuse towards somebody on the basis of the colour of their skin, is something that should have the highest priority in our game. I'm glad you pulled that. I don't know. Listen, we're all debating with a common interest, but it is important to make the distinction. Although we have racism in society, football needs to fix football's problems. And so I'm glad you made that point, because it is a very important point. Lots of people try to get off the hook. Football tries to get off the hook by suggesting it's a wider problem. The CEO at Millwall tried to do that as well. But you can control what goes on in your house. You can control what goes on in your stadium, which kind of answers the other point made about Huddersfield, if they don't have that much money. If you know you don't have that much money, there is even more of an onus on you, if you don't want to get fined, if you don't want to get punished, to say to your fans, we will take a zero tolerance approach towards you. If you have a season ticket and you are pictured on camera making any kind of offensive gesture, we will revoke your season ticket. We will get you out. Because that's what football needs to do. It needs to take a zero-tolerance approach. All of the solutions, in inverted commas, so far have been wishy-washy, have been hands in the air. You and I, Jordan, we've talked about this issue. We've been on shows about this issue many times. And we've said this very point. If we don't deal with it in our game, we'll be back here in 6 weeks' time. And look, we're back here 6 weeks' time. And that's the big problem with racism. It isn't that we don't know what to do. It's that we won't do it because it's too much aggravation. Because it's... Listen, you can get material, Premier League material, footage from games wiped off Twitter within seconds. You far faster action than you can get to deal with racism. This is our problem. Why? Because there's money in it. There's no money in solving racism. You will always get full stadia. You will always get people coming to want to watch the product. What we need to do is A, take that zero tolerance approach, and B, have faster investigations, and C, have clubs willing to act, willing to do what needs to be done. Otherwise, this will just come round again and again and again.
Just finally, you guys... Go on.
But just on the back of what you were saying, there is some onus on fans to make it uncomfortable for these people to say these things. That's the onus I put on fans. People shouldn't be so weary to say something if the person next to them is being racist or prejudiced in any way, shape or form. But the media, off the back of some racist incidents like this year, when I mentioned naming and shaming earlier, it's because of this reason. Off the back of the banana throwing of Tottenham Arsenal, The main news story that came from that was from off the back of his name, the person that threw it was, how can I be racist? I'm Greek living in Tottenham. That was the main article really? From him. I forgot what newspaper it was. Mm. Now, go to the Sterling incident. It was, you black something. Mm. Now, that word was being mm-hmm. questioned. Mm-hmm. Now, even then, like...
It's, so the way that it's often reported
of
isn't
course.
Even...
And if Sterling didn't highlight it in his Instagram post, mm. if Aubameyang didn't highlight it in his Instagram post, because the media reaction from the banana throwing incident, that's that picture of a banana skin in front of Aubameyang's mm. feet, mm-hmm. it's prehistoric. Like, if it happened in English football in 2018, mm. it should have been front page mm. news. Mm. Instead, it's not front page news. And this goes to the media.
I think you make a good point about the media that I think is important to address, and I wouldn't even agree with you. The way that racism is reported in the media isn't good enough. Everyone is tiptoes around it when an allegation is made, but when somebody wants to come out and say, I'm not racist, they get all the space they want, and lots of airtime is devoted to it. So I think you make a good point. We're not in disagreement at all.
Yeah.
There are lots of different elements to this that need to be addressed properly. And I think with the Arsenal situation, it was described as a missile rather than a banana. If it happens in Spain, Italy, Russia, we're very, very quick to describe them as racist. Mm-hmm. But not over here. It's as if we are above all of
them. We don't do that.
We don't have... Exactly. So you're absolutely right. And you know, again, Jordan and I, we've talked about this before. The media has to look at itself as well. I do. The only thing I think about fans, I've been to stadia, mini stadia over 20 years, and I know that ideologically it would be great if fans could police themselves and say to us, no, you're out of order. But, you know, we saw fans at Arsenal fighting over Arsene Wenger, yeah, and that was fans of the same club fighting over Arsene Wenger. You know,
our priorities are all wrong, aren't they?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And I just think it's too difficult to put people in that situation to say, you must go and call out animals, basically, mm. thugs. People are prepared to use language like that. You can't legislate for what they might do if you were to confront them. And I don't think that's fair on fellow fans. The onus is people who want to attract us to their stadia.
Cheers, Darren. Nice one, mate.
But what you said just now, Jordan.
Cheers, boss. Sorry, go on, sir.
What you said just now, Jordan, about that we bring it on ourselves. I'll go back to the Arsenal game against Man City last week. We was in Manchester. Why are the Arsenal mm. fans booing Sterling?
Mm.
Why are we booing Sterling? Yeah, yeah. Kyle Walker, an ex-Tottenham player, plays for Man City. He touched the ball however many times in that game and he didn't get booed. Why did... Like, Troops brought it up in his interview.
Mm, you did, I saw
it's
that,
because
yeah.
of... It's, we don't... We. Where's our priorities at the end of the day? How did we manage to end up?
But that just could be because how he's portrayed in the media.
Exactly.
And that's
so
where obviously where it come when my
domino effect.
Yeah, what I was talking about earlier, where is a lot of my disdain for certain aspects of the tabloids is a lot comes from that, like how Sterling was portrayed and the twisting and the false truths and things like that. And I think that's where that probably comes from.
Yeah, of course, 100%. I know it comes from the direction of the way Sterling's portrayed. Mm. But we as Arsenal fans should look at ourselves and think, hold on. Let's analyze where we get our media sources from, where we what we believe, what we listen to, what we dismiss, and if that's our
can I
problem.
Just say, I'm still here, and you know, it's listen again, it's a perfectly legitimate point to make, but because all of us in the media, and I include myself in that, you know, I am part of the media, so I can't distance myself from anywhere else. I have to look at myself. Have I shouted loud enough? You know, I may have said stuff, I may have written stuff, but did I say it with enough ferocity? You know, I think we failed these boys in the media. And it's important to point out because there's another generation of young men who are going into football knowing that the game can't protect them from racist abuse. So there has to be a way to be able to address that properly. But the media's failed them as well because of the representation of young black men in our media. And the way to change that is if we've got black men and women in positions of decision making in our media organizations and in footballing authority. If we have that, we have a different perspective on the kind of thing we read and the kind of thing we see. If we don't have that, we will continue as we are and we'll get situations like this boy being unfairly booed at stadiums around the country.
Agree. Darren, for the second time, cheers, pal.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me on.
That's one thing. Cheers, Darren. All right, gents, let's now move on to our next debate. I want to talk about money in football, or money men in football, because I've just kind of got this bugbear about the fact that we all watch and support and follow an industry that's a multi-billion pound industry. Our teams are multi-million pound clubs, yet so much money seems to get just frivolously wasted. And someone's making decisions on contracts and transfer fees and agents fees, and I don't know if there's enough accountability on the men that sign off certain things within football at football clubs. Just today, funny enough, I planned this show, but just literally an hour ago, it was announced that our club, Aaron Ramsey, is reported to be now getting a contract worth 400 grand a week at Juventus. Now, I'm a Ramsey fan. I wanted him to stay. And fair play to him. He's played a blind up. Get your money. But that's an example for me of mismanagement financially within Arsenal. I want to broaden it out to just generally in the Premier League. I'll start with you, Micah. Do you agree that there's so much wastage of money in football? And do you have any ideas as to why that is?
Oh, I'm glad you talked about the Ramsey situation. Anyway, me personally, I know we'll a lot there. About the behind the scenes, like the agent parts, because that's a path that I'm seriously on.
School me.
But in relation to the Ramsey one, it's more or less basically because he's gone on a free.
Yeah.
There's no upfront fee. So when there's no upfront fee, what the club decides to do, they'll pay, a player the signing on fee. Mm. But because they're not losing any bulk cash, they can boost a player's contract significantly up. And now we looked like he wanted 250 at Arsenal. Apparently, I don't know.
It was around that, apparently. Yeah.
That's what I was heard. I don't know how much that's true. But if you take on, if you add on the 150 over the 4 years, what does...
I don't know. It's a good deal. Juventus aside, I'm talking about the mismanagement of money in the Arsenal side.
But in the Arsenal side, I feel like what Turkish said before we came in, he spoke about the fact that before, I think Henry was the first player that was earned over 100,000. Before that, Arsenal were very...
I think it was
good.
Wasn't it Campbell?
Was it Campbell?
I think
one
Campbell.
Of them.
Yeah, one of the two. They were really good. But then again, I feel that within the Premier League, you can be good with money. You can be very good with money, but what steps are you taking as a club? You look at how Spurs are run. They're extremely good with money. And there was a report saying that if you double all their players, you give they still won't have the highest world. So it can be done, but I feel that agents and players have found a way and they've looked what's happening globally and the money that has been injected into the Premier League and they're taking advantage of it. You see like the Ozil situation at Arsenal now. I believe that he took advantage of what was happening around him. I don't feel like City's model is still quite good. If you look at the bigger picture, they haven't signed a player for ridiculous sums of money. I think the highest they've gone over is like about 50 to 60.
Yeah.
And if you look at their outlay, they can get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 players, 50, between 30 and 50. But you have other clubs, which United, who are blowing, you know, astronomical sums of money. But the players are seeing this and they're looking at what can I do for myself, not only just right now, but in long term. If a club wants to get rid of a player, they can easily do that. But player looks at himself, okay, I need to take care of myself now and post football. So they're the gaps there. And the other thing that you need to look at in relation to the players who are, we say, earning their, you know, relation to value for money, players that who do, like Salah, for example, when he came in, his agent put some incentives on the table and he met them. So obviously that goes against to issuing him a new contract. But in the broader sense, I think because in the broader sense, from what you've said, I feel that there's a lot more wastage than there is
value
being spent on money. And that's just because there's so much money being thrown into the Premier League now. Clubs are not, they want to get things done regardless. So they're just thinking,
spend whatever it takes.
Spend whatever it takes. You want to stay in the Premier League, spend whatever it takes because you're earning more being in the Premier League. As soon as you go down, so many clubs
struggle
to get back because they don't have the money.
So Dan, what about your club? Do your club spend money well? Do you think you get value for money? I mean, some people would say, you know, there's no point putting a figure on a player because it's all crazy anyway. But do you feel the finances within your club? I mean, I can get it up here in a second, your turnover from last year, but from what you've seen, are a West Ham a club that spend well? Are the money men at West Ham looking after your money well?
I think it's improving. It's definitely improving. Look, if you look at it like purely from a business sense and you take your fandom out of the equation, they've done quite well. I mean, from a business standpoint, they've brought in, you know, more sponsorship and, you know, tried to manage our debt, although actually the way they've managed it, a lot of fans aren't quite happy about it. They've sort of taken it onto themselves. They've bought the debt.
Okay.
And it's charging interest. So
to
the club. So that's just reminded me that, which is a source for it. But yeah, in terms of the club, look, we're seeing like West Ham rise through all these top lists of top most valuable clubs or top highest profitable clubs and things like this. We're getting in the world, we're talking about, and we're getting into like top 20s of this and top fives and top 10. Sorry, I saw on another lift. So I think we're getting to the point where the business side is run well. Obviously, there's the transfer side, and we've obviously had players like Arbeloa on big money, Patrice Evra, on big money, and there is still that tendency to sign a big name that's kind of over the hill and get him to big wages. But now you look at the Nasri deal. From what I heard from the Nasri deal is he's on 60. At the moment, it's something quite small. It's like 60 grand a week or something like that for this 6 months. If we sign him, then he goes to the big money. So it's little clever things like that. So I think we are improving, but before it was a bit disastrous. Andy Carroll's still a sore sport for me.
He's getting
100
goofy.
Grand a week, mate.
Ouch. Turkish, we spoke about Everton a couple of weeks ago. We had an Everton fan on the pod.
Yeah.
And he flagged up a couple of the players that are on big wages that I didn't even know. So I've just got here. Bernard is on 120 a week. Amina's on 120, Pickford 100, Schneiderlin is on 100k a week, Sigurdsson 100, Walcott 100. You know, that for me, I'm not necessarily a money man,
yeah,
but that for me, for some of those players, just seems like they've been bent over. Let's have it right.
They have been, like, you know, this whole owner.
And someone's signing that off.
Yeah, the whole owner investment thing, yeah, it reminds me of Football Manager. Like, obviously, you brought the topics out to me yesterday, so yeah. I've been thinking about it on the way in as well. And I think a lot of these new investors or new owners come in, and Kroenke is a prime example. They don't know much about football. They just know the money is in football right now, and the money is in football in the Premier League right now. So they're investing in these clubs. Now, if you've all played Football Manager, you know you manage the club you want to manage.
Mm-hmm.
Did you really do a head of scout first? Did you really get your coaches first? Did you really look into the head of football?
You just start spending.
No, you start spending. Because naturally, that's what you want to do. You want to get the players in. And a lot of these owners have done that. Man City's owner now, he started doing that, backtracked and got the guy from Barcelona in before he even got Pep in. And that was the start of what we see from Man City. Now, not bringing in Pep, it was bringing in, I forgot the role he was, chief executive scout. I don't know what he was, but they brought him in. And they built from there. Pep followed, the big names followed on good transfer fees, as you said, not over 60. Morris is the highest, yeah. And he's a bench player. And now you see it in motion. Mm. Whereas you get someone like Abramovich, who brought in the manager, Jose, got all the signings in, won a few things. It didn't work out. There was nothing to build on. Next manager. And it's been next manager ever since, because there's no back room. There's no philosophy there.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I know we move on to Sarri in a bit. But I believe they should stick with Sarri because they've brought in a manager who has a philosophy. Now, if you're an owner who doesn't know much about football, that's what you need. You need someone with a footballing philosophy because you don't have one.
Mm.
So you need to bring one in. And that's how I see Sarri right now. Same with Pellegrini. I assume that that's a big coup for you lot, having Pellegrini as a manager.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of his philosophy, and he's won the league.
But then on a financial standpoint for us, though, there has to be that good investment for us, because you're coming from, we had David Moyes, who's kind of a defensive manager. Bilic was in between a bit Moyes and a Sam, and then you had obviously Big Sam. Now you're having a guy with a whole new style and philosophy. You've got to invest so he has the players all around the pitch who can play his style.
Or let's say there's a level playing field for three different clubs 6 years ago. Let's take Tottenham, yeah? The Arsenal route, we discussed it. We was very tight. We wasn't spending 100k on no players. All of a sudden now we're spending recklessly on however many players. Mismanaged. Our business model went up in the air. Liverpool now, 6 years ago, they wasn't title contenders. They wasn't up there. They wasn't the talk of anything. They slowly got assets in. Young players on Coutinho in, 8 million. Suarez in, 23 million. 2-3 years later, combined, they bring in 225-30 mil. That's the assets now to reinvest in the squad.
Look at Southampton, though. Southampton is this example. And, I used to always do collaborations with a Southampton channel. I used to always say to them, because they would find all these gems, right, sell them for big, big money, find more gems. You know, get rid of managers, find another, you know, great manager. And say, listen, there's only so many times you can go to the world before it runs dry. They haven't invested that money smartly. They haven't managed to keep hold of the players and give them higher wages. Now, obviously, they're battling relegation. And, yeah, it's a mad. So when you do that model of finding a young player and scouting them and finding them for cheap and then maybe selling them on and reinvesting, you've got to do it in a smart way.
But... Yeah, so it's the footballing people behind it. And but then you take Tottenham 6 years ago. Tight like Arsenal were. They weren't even spending as much as Arsenal. They've kept it tight since. Mm. Kept it tight, not spending. But because they've got footballing people in the background, they've given Pochettino the control that Wenger had over our team, essentially. Mm-hmm. And you can see that paying dividends.
I think they've got one more seat. Like, it's got, surely when you're some of their players, when they're looking at what other clubs' players are getting, they're going to be like, look, right, yes, we haven't won any trophies, we're barely now making the top three or merely challenging. Like, I want to go somewhere else. I want to go somewhere. Someone's gonna, like, what's Harry Kane on? I think he's their highest paid. Like, they just get him to 200 grand a week or something.
Something like that. Yeah.
Something like that. So they've only just recently pushed him up. Yeah, 170. But he can get more than that somewhere else and compete for honours. So
of course. But looking at what Liverpool did, this is what I'm scared of. If I'm Tottenham this summer and we don't win nothing, I'm selling Kane for 200 mil. We've got Son who's banging. We've got Son who's banging.
You're saying you would if you were Daniel Levy?
Of course I'm selling Kane for 200 mil right now. Why not? Because then you reinvest and do what Liverpool did. Fix the areas you need, because you've been missing something for 4 years. So when are you going to be like, okay, why don't we take a risk and sell one of our... Because they've got Eriksen, Kane, Ali, Son.
Well, Eriksen's into his last year, I think.
He is. So potentially sell Kane 200 mil, bump up Eriksen's contract, give Son an extension, then go and invest that 170 mil. Maybe 30 mil of that goes to the current team's wages. Invest 170 mil into a... What do Tottenham need? I'd say two centre mids, a defensive mid and a box-to-box mid. And potentially then, cool, you've lost Kane. Like,
but you do that
Liverpool
at the risk
lost,
of selling
Liverpool
arguably the best...
Suarez was a
wouldn't say he's the best striker.
I wouldn't say. I agree.
But that's what you were saying earlier about Aubameyang, isn't it?
And I feel like
he's arguably the best striker on the planet.
Yeah, but
Suarez was the
every player has a window, and like within that window, you either commit to that player. Like, you look at Arsenal, they allowed a lot of their players to go to their last year, and I feel that's the biggest thing. Yeah. If they weren't in the last year of their deal, they would have gotten a lot of money for those players. You'd look at Nasri, Van Persie. If you saw Van Persie the year after the 10-11 season when he's got like 37 goals, you'd get at least 40-50 million for him.
At least.
You let him go for 24. Nasri's going for... They didn't go for the value of the... But as we look at it, 100k a week is becoming the new benchmark. And I feel like the problem is that a lot of these players are earning 100k a week and they've got nothing to back it up. I feel like if you look at different clubs that are well run, they lower the basic wage, but then they give you a lot of incentives. Mm. If you meet those incentives, we can look at renewing your contract.
Is that the Tottenham model? Because it seems like every 6 months they're bumping up Ali's contract, like, Kane's contract.
It's a reason why, like, if you go to Spain, you look at Messi, he's always signing like a new deal every year and a half, because he keeps on hitting his targets. And that's the best way, because you lower it, but you give him
a reason to kind of be hungry.
And what happens is that agents are looking across the board, looking at different clubs, looking at how much money is in the Premier League as well, and they're saying, okay, I want this. If I don't have this, he's gonna go here.
Okay,
clubs are scrambling. Okay, we're gonna have to pay him over the odds. They're not performing.
So let me bring up Fulham now then. Everybody praised Fulham at the start of the season for spending 100 plus mil in the summer. It was like, oh yeah, you know, they're spending money, but I've got some good players in rare. They could be gone before March. So was it wise that they invested the money to that level to try and stay in the Premier League? Or was the Cardiff, as we're seeing, as their model, where they went the other way? They didn't spend anything. Do you know what I mean? But they may well still up. So is spending necessary to kind of be competitive in the league at that end anyway?
It is necessary, but you need to find a balance. They spent 100 million, but how many players did they bring in?
Like 14.
Brought in a lot of players. Mm. You've got the summer to work with, integrate 14 different players. It's a long time. Look at Wolves. How many players did they sign?
Three
they
or four.
Took just one or two changes they held the structure of the team. Fulham is almost like a complete overhaul. Recently now, they're bringing in Ryan Babel, Andre Schürrle. How much do you think they're on?
Big money.
Yeah. How much, they would have been on big money. And do we know if it's a 6 months at the end of the season? What normally happens? It's not the first time it's happened with clubs down at the bottom of the table. They do that, then they get relegated. But then those contracts carry over to when they're in the Championship. And that's a lot of money to be paying out when you don't have that much money coming in. Mm. Get stuck in a cycle, and then they stayed up.
So QPR, I think that's like, yeah, with QPR. They went mad on it. They went. I remember that they started signing like G-San Park, Rio Ferdinand.
Who was the Chelsea right back? Basingua.
They were signing all these big names for big money, getting them all in. It didn't work. They got relegated. And then I think they came up again, and then they spent more money, and it with Mark Hughes, and got relegated. Really, and it's Fulham have tried to do that, and it's mad. I think any team coming up, you've got to keep that core team and make some key improvements. And then maybe next season, once you're stabilised in the Premier League,
then you go then in. Spend.
That's what Huddersfield. You know, if they was in a position this season, then they could have really, because they did well last season to stay up, but then this season could have been the season.
So let me finally ask you guys: is there a team in the Premier League that, in accordance to what they've spent, have met their targets?
Tottenham.
So if their target was to, what do you think their targets were at the start of the season?
Tottenham smash targets every season. Targets probably
compete for the league.
Targets top four. If that, they don't spend like a top four club. So they, what is their target? I don't.
Cause surely they've got to win a trophy. Like,
you can't. Because there's one Premier League trophy. One. This is my thing with the whole Pochettino thing. I actually back him. Because there's one Premier League trophy. Liverpool spend enough to win it. Man City spend enough to win it. Man United spend enough to win it. Chelsea spend enough to win it. Now that's four teams that spend enough to win that one trophy.
Even an FA Cup though.
I don't want to kind of get this week into the whole, do you something to win a trophy? But are we agreeing that in accordance to what their targets are, they've matched it? In
100%.
Terms,
yeah. They could be in Europa League and still make profits right now.
Is there any other team in the Premier League that you think has, or is meeting their targets?
Wolves, Brighton. Yeah,
I feel like West Ham.
Wolves, Brighton, West Ham.
Remodeled. I don't think you're ever going to see them giving a 6-year deal, 100k a week again. I feel like they've done like a lot of mistakes. They're doing things.
They're learning.
They're doing things.
So, what was the West Ham target at the start of the season? Do you reckon? What would you think? What have Pellegrini been told? We expect this season.
For us, I think that the main target was top 10.
Okay.
For us, a lot of it was to stay out of the relegation battle because, you know, we'd had such lack of stability for the past few seasons. New manager, we brought in 11 new players. It was like, right, let's have this season, let's not get dragged into the relegation battle, and let's get some stability in the club. And then next season, I think the target. So I think for what we're doing, like me as a fan, it was just purely don't get involved in the relegation battle, stabilise, and we've hit that target.
You know, the two teams I think that have, in accordance to what they've spent, have exceeded their targets are Watford and Bournemouth. Those are two teams that I think would have been told at the start of the season, just stay up.
Bournemouth have been doing amazing these past
few years. I think Bournemouth, even though they've been in the Premier League for a few seasons, I still believe their objective is just stay in the league. And they could finish eighth. Do you know what I mean? So for what they've spent, I think they've spent really wisely and really intelligently. And you've got bad examples like Fulham, like Arsenal, who I think have just gone the other way. And just literally, from what they've spent, they've massively underachieved.
I think Tottenham have spent less than them.
Than Watford?
Yeah, I think didn't Tottenham buy Son for 16 and Bournemouth buy Ibe for 19? Not Ibe. What's the other? Solanke for 19 and Tottenham buy Son for 16.
Even that, Bournemouth's still like, they're still even making, like doing the right thing, because they bought Max Gradle, remember?
Yeah.
That didn't work out really good. I think what
they've had some bombs. They've had over the last few years. That was bad business. Yeah,
English talent that he knows that can work and that brought them up in the first place. And I don't feel like, I feel you're kind of being unfair about Arsenal.
Yeah, maybe we're not severely underachieving, but
no, we're on target this year.
You think we're on target?
Yeah. Bang on target. Be in the That's top what I suppose, four race.
You know,
and
I'll take that back. You're probably
February,
right. You're right.
Bang
you're right.
On target.
You're probably right. You're probably right.
Yeah. I just think you mean in terms of how it's run financially.
Yeah.
So you see Arsenal Football Club. Yeah. We're not. But yeah, this season, beginning of the season, we're on target.
All right, let's do a very quick. Someone reminded me, tweeted me 2 weeks ago. We haven't done a fantasy football update on the pod this calendar year. And I was like, right, yeah, I totally forgot. So Tom Robinson is top of our league with 73 points so far. He's been top for a while, Tom. Josh Hall is into second now, has moved up with a game week of 48 points. Josh, our sound tech here. You're 56th in our league, mate, out of 75 teams. You need to sort that out, mate. I had 106 points this weekend, and I've still got two players to come in. So I'm buzzing.
What's this, fantasy Premier League?
Fantasy football, come on.
Yeah?
I'm killing it. Have 106 points. Somebody touched that this weekend.
Do you know what? I'll commend all of you for keeping up and still doing the Fantasy Football League and not losing interest. I commend you all.
Yeah. Don't play.
I've got money on the line.
Yeah, I've got money on my show. Yeah.
How are you doing in your league?
First. I've been first like match day.
How many teams are in your league?
There are like 8 of us.
That's easy.
No. It's not. It's tough.
That's how you stay interested. Money.
Yeah,
it has to be.
Where are you in your league, Turkish?
I'm in 4 leagues.
Out of how many teams?
I'm in 4 leagues.
4 leagues, okay.
3 of them on first. One of them on third. In the one on third, there's about 18. But it was £30 entry each. Then we've got £500 in personal bets that I'll finish above you or I'll finish above you.
£500 bets?
Jeez.
Oh, you've gone in.
You're sleeping on your phone.
You've got in.
I'm like the wild card this week.
You're trying to party at the end of the season, yeah?
Yeah, if it comes through, boy, that's half my season ticket.
I've got Patricio playing in goal tonight as we record this, so hopefully he can get a clean sheet.
And Jimenez up front and Dombele at the back.
I've got Jimenez at the
back. Come on.
All right, let's move on to our next one, guys. Let's talk now about... just thinking. Let's do this one. Have a bit of fun now. Hazard. It's looking like, in accordance to what he said last week, that... he's made his mind up about where he will be going. That it looks like he's more leaving than staying. So I'm wondering, when I heard that, I was thinking about his legacy in the Premier League and, you know, if he does leave this summer, what that legacy in the Prem would be. So I want to find out from you guys, if you think, if he does leave this summer, does he make the Premier League's top 5 all-time list of foreign players? Turkish, I'll start with you.
Nah.
Go on.
No way.
Top 10?
Possibly, but you gotta include defenders in there as well. This is what
you can put who you want in there.
Oh, I could easily name 10. I think
you can name 10 defenders.
No, 10 all round players.
Sorry, all round players.
Foreign players.
Okay,
I can name 3 keepers: Peter Schmeichel, Van der Sar, and Petr Cech. That's already 3 players in out of the 10, and that's keepers.
You think Van der Sar's impact on the Premier League was bigger than Eden Hazard's? Interesting. Dan?
If you look at that, Hazard won 2 leagues. Van der Sar won, 2 or 3? And the Champions League? And a couple of FA Cups?
In the Champions League?
Van der Sar did it.
Oh, Van der Sar, sorry, yeah, for Hazard. Czech
won the Champions League.
Yeah.
Peter Schmeichel's won the Champions League and multiple leagues. At least 2, if not more. Then you've got Aguero, Tevez, Henri, Bergkamp.
I would argue that Hazard, unlike a lot of those players you've named, was the main man in his team winning the league.
Okay, if you're talking main men, and Aguero, Henri...
Oh, I'd say Costa as well was a big one. Diego Costa, man. Look at... No, listen. What have they done since... since Diego Costa has left Chelsea, what's happened to them?
They won the league once. They won the league.
He was there for the last season. Then he left... And then, obviously, they had Conte's second season, which was a shambles. Now they're in the situation they're in now, which is a shambles. I mean, you talk about a poorly run club. They signed Giroud and loaned Batshuayi to Dortmund so you guys could get Aubameyang instead of getting Aubameyang themselves. Like, so really, I'd say Costa, you could see, was personally a bigger influence. Like, look, but the thing is, Hazard as well, he's known to be... inconsistent. He has his off times. Like, he's not someone like you see every season.
Would you, Micah?
He was.
You'd put him in top 5.
No way. But that Costa one. No.
So who would be? Just give me 5 names.
Top
that you'd
5.
Put
okay,
before
like him. I'm a big fan of ability and application. Ability could put.
No. We'll get to ability in a minute. I'm talking impact. Have there been 5 foreign players?
He's not even 5 at Chelsea.
There's 5 foreign players at Chelsea.
You've
been a big impact.
Drogba, Lampard,
foreign.
Terry,
foreign.
Oh, she said foreign. Yeah. You got Drogba,
Robin. Robin, I think.
Robin's impact was bigger than.
Robin was the first league title to Chelsea. That
but
was
I could
the
say
first good Chelsea team.
Impact in the Prem bigger than Eddins.
Questionable, isn't it?
No,
he was only
me.
There 3 years, though. All right, fair enough.
In the Premier League, no.
Okay, so we're saying top 5, no. Top 10.
No.
Yeah.
Top 10 foreign Premier League players.
Yeah.
It's one that you'd probably have to really sit down and look
Vieira,
at everyone.
Vieira, Roy Keane, Kante. 100%.
Keane wouldn't be foreign.
Well, he's
Irish. Republic of Ireland is foreign to this country.
Republic
of Ireland's not British. It's Northern Ireland.
I have to say this. I have to put that stamp on it.
So you're saying he's in your top 10?
But would you disagree with Kante, Vieira, Roy Keane, though? You wouldn't, innit?
Kante, though.
Look at their Premier League time overall. Who's made the biggest impact? Hazard has only twice got less than 15 goals. He's not got 20 once, but he's got only twice, two seasons, he's got less than 15 goals. He's won a PFA Player of the Year, and I would say in one of the two title wins, if not both, but definitely one, he dragged them to a title.
Would you say he's top five?
I wouldn't put him in top five.
He's definitely top 10.
But I think top 10's a question.
Yeah, it depends. 10 years' time, is everyone going to be looking back going, oh, do you remember Hazard? Like, is he going to be remembered the same way when people look back and think of Bergkamp?
You answer the question.
Like, I don't think so. I don't know.
Only reason why I wouldn't say so is because there hasn't been a sustained dominance. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying necessarily winning the league, because like you said, there's only one Premier League. You're not always going to win the league.
Even winning and challenging,
there has to be a sustained period of dominance. Like, you know that far and away, you got 15, 16, he went like 300 and it went about a year. Was that the year that they finished 10th?
Yeah.
You got that. Then you've got this season. Well, he's good this season. You got last season. So he does like one good one, a bad one, a good one, then a bad... It's not...
All right, then. So you mentioned ability.
Can I throw in another few names?
Go on.
Because I've done keepers already, I've done... Stan Vidic company. Impact, hard. Consistency, there.
Champion. I'm not having Stan. Stan wasn't here long enough to say that his impact was bigger than Hazard's. Vidic, I'll give you Vidic. Who's the third person?
Company. I can see...
Man City boss.
I can see where you're coming
Company's
from.
Company's a shout. All right, let's go to ability now, then. Does he get in the top five... most talented, technically talented footballers of the Premier League era?
Yeah.
Top five?
I don't know. We got Ronaldo.
Top five?
Ronaldo.
Henry.
Bergkamp.
Be careful with what you're going to
say. All right, Bergkamp. Henry. You put Henry up there. Drogba. I don't know.
Was Drogba more talented than Hazard?
I suppose not in ability, not in technical ability.
We're talking about ability now, not impact ability.
I don't know.
Down the ball, heading is ability. That's what people...
No, it is.
We're going for the better on the eye ability. But Drogba's ability... Hazard can't do what Drogba does. He cannot do it.
So you think that Drogba's got a better skill set than Hazard?
For the position, yes. 100%.
Because as well, you've got like now.
Look at Hazard
like,
up front. Dead.
But he's not a forward.
Yeah, he's not. But it depends on the positions as well, isn't it? Yeah, that's why it depends on the positions.
And then you look at some of City's players, David Silva, De Bruyne.
There you go.
Top 10?
No, I wouldn't say. He's top five.
He's top five.
Ability, I have to give him.
Premier League started, 1992. Yeah. So in the last, what's that? Like 17 years.
No, Zola. You see, Bergkamp.
Even saying
Henri ability. Yeah, the reason I'm careful is because it's not like he came through as a wonder. You get what I'm saying? Most of it came as he was playing for Arsenal. I'm talking about when Hazard came. Yeah, his ability was. Every team wanted him.
I'm kind of with you. I think the Henri one's a question. I think in terms of raw natural ability, I think Henri Hazard's a question mark.
I could say Bergkamp all day.
That's not a question.
Not a question mark. I'll have Hazard. I'll have David Silva. And then the rest is a toss up. You could have.
If we're talking about ability, I'm going to say one person that definitely got more ability: Berbatov.
It's a good shot.
He's definitely got more ability.
So is he in your top 10 for ability?
For ability? Berbatov's top 5.
Hazard for ability.
Hazard. Top
5 is a bit of a question, It's a difficult one.
If Salah wins a league, Salah's going to be...
I had that question. Whose legacy would be...
Like you said, he hasn't scored over 15 in 6 years. Salah done 13-1 and he's already on more than 15 in his second.
He does play a little bit more central, to be fair.
Now he does. Last season, Firmino was the main.
I mean,
you put Hazard central, it's not the same as Salah central.
You're right. All right, let's bring in. Let's have a laugh about Man City Chelsea game yesterday. let's go through that. And I want to bring in Nini from Blue Lions TV. Nini, you finished crying yet?
Yeah, I'm feeling better now. Like, I finally got over it. I've got some Chinese food now. So
without, I don't want to go into the game so much because I think it was what it was. But yeah. As a fan, Nini, can you think of a Chelsea loss that hurt more than yesterday?
You know what? I remember that same game last season under Conte. I know it was 1-0, but I've never been so ashamed of seeing a performance in my life. It was like the worst thing I've ever seen. Now, I know we got completely destroyed against Man City, but at least we tried to win the game. You know, we were taking shots on goal. We were still pushing forwards. I'd rather see that than not seeing any effort at all, not seeing no heart, no desire. You know what I mean?
Even if it ends in a 6-0 loss.
Yeah, because I just want to see some application or some effort at least, even if it's 1%.
I hear you. I mean, there's lots of gloom and it looks a bit peak for you guys right now. But a convincing win in the Europa League, if you beat United in the Cup on Monday and somehow win the Cup final in the following week, the 10 days could be looking completely opposite. So is it as bad as all day people have been saying?
I mean, it's quite hard to say because, you know, as Sarri was saying, you know, the team felt very confident before the game. Everyone was pumped, ready to take on Man City. I mean, we started the game well, that, you know, that first 3 minutes until that stupid Alonso mistake. So it's hard to really predict how we're going to play because it seems like any time any adversity is faced, this team crumbles because, you know, there's a few individuals in the team that aren't good enough.
Do you think the board have got to take a bit of responsibility, you know, and not so much Sarri because they knew what they were getting when they appointed Sarri. So is it a case now of you knew what you were getting? Is now a pivotal moment in Chelsea's kind of history in that it would be very easy and very Chelsea-like to just sack Sarri? It's not working out. We've been on a bad run of form. We're not in the title contention. Sack him and we'll go again. Or do the board have to stand firm and stick with the whole reason why they appointed him in the first place?
I mean, to be honest, I think it would be nice to hear the club come out and officially back Sarri. Yeah. But at the same time, it seems like it's the press that's really just forcing this. You know, I don't think Sarri's under pressure at all. I think the club understand, you know, why they brought him in. So I don't really back, you know, buy this myth about us being like a sacking club. I mean, yeah, of course, we were back in the day. But since Mourinho's second spell and Conte, if this was the old us, they would have been sacked before, a long time before.
Hang on. You've had three managers in 5 years?
Yeah, I mean, that's better than how it used to be before. You know, I don't know. I'm just saying that I didn't mean it like that because obviously we were really bad back in the day. You know, you get sacked after like three or four games. That's how ruthless we used to be. But I'm saying, you know, Mourinho had half a season to ruin before he got the sack. And it wasn't even him getting sacked. He said that he can't do any more and he left on his own terms. It's only Conte is the one that really got sacked. And we let him ruin our entire season. So.
There's no way they come.
I mean, of course he did, of course. But I mean, you know, the club, there's no way that we're going to be sacking Sarri anytime soon.
Michael, do you think he will see the season out? Do you think they will stand firm or do you think they'll do a Chelsea?
I still think that he will see the season out. I don't feel that the fans should be worried. I think fans are like, you're very quick to say, oh my God, you lost 6-0. But then again, they beat Man City earlier this season 2-0. They still have the ability to win those big games. They beat Arsenal at Stamford Bridge. You're not always going to go away and win at the other team. Okay, the scoreline was
there's not winning and then there's losing in 24 minutes.
If you've shown that you can beat them already this season at home, you didn't win away. You shouldn't then just say, oh my God, okay, cool, there's an issue.
Yeah,
you've got clubs who can't even win. Okay, I don't mean to say like that, but Arsenal never used to win at home or away.
So why are you shooting for?
I'm just saying they're top clubs who can't win at home. If you can win at home, that's a start. You're not going to... When Pep first came, he wasn't first winning at home and then winning. You got to establish your home ground first. The first thing he did this season was buy the most important player to him that was for implementing his philosophy, which was Jorginho. And then he just said, okay, we're going to see exactly what we can do with the remaining players around. I feel like going into the summer is his chance to say, okay, the wingers that we have, the right side of the wing is not good enough. These are places that we can improve. But right now, like you said, 10 days, run of fixtures. It's not like they're off top for their point.
Is Abramovich going to spend that big money though anymore? Like, he doesn't, I don't know. Like,
but the thing is, this is what I find interesting, because I thought the whole point of bringing in someone like Sarri in was because he was basically saying, them big spending days are done. I'm bringing in Sarri, who can coach, who can develop, who can bring a philosophy in. So any threat of the sack for me wouldn't make sense, because the whole point of bringing in a guy like Sarri is you accept it might be sticky for the first year, but in the second and third year, it's going to be really, really good.
Yes. Yeah, but they could potentially have to replace Hazard, though, in the second year. So.
But I think this is what Chelsea have got to stop looking at Hudson-Odoi and Hazard in the short term. Hazard's probably going to go. Don't base your decision on Sarri whether Hazard stays or not. Look at the next 10 years. What kind of club do Chelsea want to be in the next 5 years? Are you going to be a team that just sacks every 18 months? Are you going to stick with a guy and go through the growing pains and then in a year and a half time reap the benefits of trusting a guy that you employed in the first place?
They need to change their youth policy for a start. Their whole approach to youth and all this loaning everyone out constantly, never giving them a chance in the first team. I don't know, I tweeted out that I think that Chelsea's days as an established top four club could be over, because I haven't seen anything over the past four transfer windows with how they've conducted themselves to say, yes, this is a club that can push on. Like, if they want to start doing things the right way, that's going to take a long time anyway, but I kind of
disagree with that though. I think their loan system is one of the best in the world.
But then they end up just selling them anyway. Like, tell me the last top player that come through their academy.
That's because they didn't have a philosopher in the position. Mm. If they had someone like a Pep or Klopp or someone, people like Salah, De Bruyne, Lukaku would have come through. They had Mourinho at this time. But what them players did is they allowed a good net profit on the sale to allow them to spend the money on the players that essentially won them the leagues in Costa, Fabregas, David Luiz. So they made the money up from that. So either way, which way you look at it, that loan thing helps them a lot. And I look at that in jealousy sometimes and I think, right, they got 30, 40 young players on loan. I don't know 30 of them, but I know there's a gem somewhere in there that eventually they're going to make money off. Maybe Hudson-Odoi. Have Arsenal got a 40 million player right now? I don't know. Ob was maybe the closest to. But if Hudson-Odoi is 40, if, in my opinion, Son at Tottenham is worth 70 more, I look at my club and I look at a loan system like that and think, wow, that's a good way to make money.
But does it mean anything if those players on the pitch aren't impacting Chelsea's success on the pitch? They've made money from a lot of those young players, granted. But as a Chelsea fan, they're thinking that model was great, but we're seeing De Bruyne kill it at City. We're seeing Salah kill it at Liverpool. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but
Lukaku at United.
But you can't have both. Like, okay, you're seeing Fabregas. I mean, you're seeing De Bruyne kill it at City now, but you saw Fabregas kill it in the first season at Chelsea. That's the risk you had to take. You got rid of. Yes, Salah's killing it now at Liverpool, but you watched Hazard kill it for you lot and win leagues. So it's a bit of give and take.
But Hazard, when Fabregas came in, he was late 20s.
Who Fabregas?
Fabregas, yeah. Whereas De Bruyne, they had, and I don't buy this idea that it was a ridiculous decision to let him go, because De Bruyne, when he was at Chelsea, wasn't the De Bruyne we're seeing right now. Yeah, so I kind of have some sympathy there.
If you had the foresight to see, like, this kid's got ability, let's coach him, let's train him. I mean, I don't know. And the thing is, I don't know if the problem may be the players themselves, because look, they've done this business under like three different managers now. It's looking like, I don't know if it's a case of it. Maybe it's not a case of they're not playing for Sarri. I probably need to say that's not the case and they're adapting. But look at this, like how they went under Mourinho and then Conte. Like,
I think attention needs to be below Sarri and above Sarri. I think Sarri just needs to be left alone to get on with it. Man. Things may get worse, and I'm going to bring you back in, Nini. Things may get worse before they get better. But do you agree that the focus now needs to be on the players and the board and what the board do next, and less about whether Sarri stays or goes?
Yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, you know, my issue with the board is actually kind of a Roman in that sense, because it's like, you know, his ambition really isn't there anymore. You know, I mean,
does that worry you?
He's passing on it does. You know, he's basically effectively passing responsibility to Marina. She gets to answer to her own demands quite a lot of times. You know, I mean, and we know that he's got a divorce. And any time billionaires get divorces, that's when they realise that they're human, you know. So obviously,
and he's going to be losing some of them billions, isn't it?
That's what I mean. Like, there's no real proper investment. He might be thinking, I've been pumping in so much money into this club, I'm not really making any return on it. So, and this is why maybe there's like these Arsenal-like, you know, cost-cutting methods.
I kind of disagree with that, because I think Abramovich took your club from someone that was on the fringes of, let's say, European football, pumped in money, got to a stage where you're competing on all fronts in Europe and the league, slowed down with the pumping in of money, brought in a loan system where you make some profit back off young players. And now if you look in the last 4 or 5 years of profit for Chelsea, Chelsea make profit
Emenala made that loan. I wasn't Roman who made it. But I mean, of course, I know what you're saying. I know what you mean. I should like be appreciative. But my issue is it's like, you know, you're giving responsibility to a board now that have no football acumen. Yeah, when it comes to the business side, amazing. Getting us tons of commercial deals.
Yeah.
But from the footballing point of view, it's not there. I mean, look at last season. The amount of money we spent on players.
And
we
that's
can't
why
get
I
rid
think
of
Sarri's a welcome change to your usual approach. I think Sarri's a philosopher. He hasn't won nothing, so how can you expect him to come in and win?
It just depends on what the people above him, if they have the right mentality and back him in the right way.
I think Chelsea have tried this 3 times before. I think when Chelsea bought in Villa Boas, they was trying to go the route of a philosopher. but it went wrong quickly. And if you look at Mourinho's second stint, that second stint wasn't meant to be a quick stint. It was meant to be Mourinho back 10 years, 15 years. The next long man, it didn't work. Now I think this is the third attempt with Sarri, and I feel like he's got to be back, because at the same time Hazard's gone in the summer. He's basically said it, so you need to stick by the manager now, because there's not a player you're going to stick by.
Well, I think on the Hazard thing as well, I think he wants to go. I think that whether he goes or not depends on Real Madrid. Because if they can't afford him, he's going nowhere.
Hazard, 150 million.
Yeah.
What money to spend then?
Then again, I don't think Sarri needs to spend. He's never been a big spender.
Yeah.
So are you saying that they're going to back him in the transfer market? The players that he had, Callejon and Insigne, they weren't. I think they were there when he got there after Rafa. Was it after Rafa Benitez?
Benitez.
The only player that they bought in that was big money, I think it was Higuain. And that was the massive change, which he was finishing second. I think what Chelsea are trying to do now is to do what kind of like Arsenal or Spurs are trying to do. The club is like self-sustained, so it doesn't need as much money coming in. And like you said, with the loan system that they have, they can capitalise if they're any player. You've got Hudson-Odoi, if he does go for 40 million,
that's good money coming in.
That's good money coming in.
Let me just very wrap up, guys, on a word on City. We can't let City win 6-0 and not mention them as well. what I find interesting is a lot of the goals that City scored on Sunday and against my lot the week before is that kind of pass, tapping from four or five yards out. Michael, why don't you think a lot of teams know how to stop that? Because it seems like we know what they're going to do, but no one seems to be able to stop it.
You can stop the system. It is possible to stop the system. We've seen teams come and do that. But then again, it's the quality of player that you have in the system.
Yeah.
What Pep has done now is that he's improved the individual quality in the system, whereby things that you've planned for, you can make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Sterling right now is as good on the right as he is on the left. They played Sterling left wing. That's normally where Sané plays. But they played him there, Bernardo Silva on the right wing. So it's a kind of thing whereby you can stop the system, but how good is the player in that position? What Pep likes to do, he likes to put players on a 1v1 on the wings, where they can make most of the difference, because teams tend to clog up the middle.
Nene, watching the game yesterday, did you think you started well, and do you think the approach of trying to put it on them despite losing 6-0 was the right approach, or would you have preferred maybe a Conte? You said earlier on that you hated the way that Conte set up last year, but considering you lost 6-0, was the approach the right approach?
I mean, everything's really in hindsight in that sense. I mean, yeah, the first 3 minutes, it was a decent start, and I think that, you know, this team is good enough to try and go out City playing this way, because, you know, we've done it before, it's not the first time, but it's the execution, and the lack of execution comes down. So a lot of these players not being good enough for this style of football. I mean, you know, with possession football, ideally you want your 10 out full players to be good on the ball. But, you know, with us against Man City, you got 6 who are good and 4 who aren't. You know, that's Alonso, that's Barkley, that's Aspi, and Pedro on the right hand side as well. Those 4 constantly losing the ball. So how can you really build? I mean, I keep saying this point to people. You know, for me, ideally, I want to see Emerson, Ruben, and Hazard down the left. You know, you look at a Sarri system, the left-hand side is the most important side. Ours is currently weak with guys like Alonso and Kovacic and Barkley. But again, I understand that if we use such an attacking left-hand side, expect us to be very weak on the transition. I mean, teams will constantly counter-attack down that side, and Luis is going to get exposed time and time again, because, you know, defensively, they're not very solid. So I can see why Sarri is like a dilemma. But I think now it's Sarri, he's got to realise, well, if the first team guys are relying on press, it doesn't really matter anymore now, you know?
I've just got to wrap up very quickly. In a word, Dan and Turkish, City or Liverpool for the league? Dan?
I'm feeling like City. I feel like the pressure's going to get to Liverpool.
You think so?
And I think City's just going to take it.
You reckon?
City.
I think City as well.
Yeah. Yeah, to be honest, one thing I want to say credit to Pep, is that we were just talking about managing these big names like Hazard, and if you talk about Pogba with Mourinho, that's one thing Pep has down on lock. Whether you're Zlatan at Barca, whether you're Sterling, who just got a new contract, showbutton against United, and he came to him at the end of the game and said, keep your head. Yeah. He's managed that team well. Mahrez, your highest signing, a bench player.
He has.
That guy, is, since Ferguson, the next best manager ever.
I hear you. Nene, just coming on the pod, mate. Also, thanks guys for coming on this week's Football Fans Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. We are on iTunes, we are on Spotify, we are on all of the socials as well. Until next week, peace.